We're here today, episode three, with Bernie. And like we've had in the past here, Clifton, we've got a guest from outside the Dauphin area, but a former Dauphinite again, Bernie Dohan. And right. He's given us his five albums. And again, these albums are, much like episode two, are not ones that Clifton and I would normally listen to. So it was a real musical stretch here for me, certainly.
That's right. We're renaming the podcast, by the way. Quarantine for the out of town Dauphinites.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. we got to get a local. Got to get a local on here. We know there's locals listening. We got to get them on pretty soon here. So, okay. So welcome, Bernie.
Welcome.
Let's jump right in here. You pick one and let's give her.
All right. Well, I guess we'll go with take two of this. I can't remember who I started with. I started with last time, but. You know what? I'm going to start with the NWA album, Straight Outta Compton. And the reason why I'm starting with this one is this is the album that really got me into hip hop. You know, I was into Beastie Boys a bit before. Everybody's like, hey, rap is crap, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. And then my buddy's like, hey, man, you got to listen to this album. I look at him like, well, what is this? Because back then, you know, late 80s in Manitoba, everybody's listening to Bon Jovi or Def Leppard. And I was just like, you know what? That's just not hitting with me. I don't get those. I just, it was like that sort of bubblegum pop, but you know, that bubblegum hair metal. I was just no, this stuff's whack. And then I hear NWA Straight Outta Compton. I'm like, wow, this is angry. What are these guys talking about? Where's this place, Compton? You know, what's a Gat? What's a 6-4? I don't know what these guys are talking about. But this is cool. This is awesome.
Do you know where Compton is yet?
Yeah, actually, I've driven through there. We were in LA one time and going to Disneyland, and we're looking at the map. This is back in the late 90s. And I'm like, when we're still using maps instead of using our phones, and I'm like, hey man, if we turn here, we can stroll right through Compton. I'm like, cool. And so I'm taking pictures like a tourist. My wife, Michelle's driving, and she's just like, stop taking pictures. We're going to get shot.
Yeah.
You were looking for some autographs or something or other, right? Someone you recognize. Yeah,
it was right down Crenshaw Boulevard. They talk about it in all their songs, you know, rolling down Crenshaw. I was like, oh, cool. And except of course, you know, we're in a rental, so I don't have any CDs or any music with me, but yeah rolling down Crenshaw.
Okay. So this is NWA's debut album, 1988, that it came out. So you would have, how old you would have been about then, Bernie?
I would have been 13, but I really got into it when I was 14, 15, going to high school. Everybody's, you know, sort of finding their identity.
Right.
You know, this is what I'm about. This is what I'm about. I'm like, oh man, this music, this is great.
Was there a group of your friends that listened to this, or were you sort of a lone wolf?
There was a group of my sort of, we were the jock basketball guys. We also played hockey too, but it was, you know, it was something different. Everybody was, you know, into Guns N' Roses. And then the school we went to in Brandon, there was a lot of people into, you know, like the Smiths. And different punk British bands. And I was like, oh no, I'm into this hip hop. This is what I'm going to be about. So, you know, we wore the LA Raiders gear, you know, the black sweatshirts. We're like, all right, this is who we are.
Yeah. I remember those days.
Yeah.
You know, when the FBI looks into your music, you know, you've got something special, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to mention that. What do you know about the FBI looking into the one song there, Bernie?
I read about that in an old rap magazine like 6 months after it happened, and I was like, wow, the FBI
and the U.S. Secret Service too, apparently.
Yeah, like, don't they have better things to be doing than listen to hip-hop albums? But you know, I guess the message of their second track, F the Police, really resonated with people in the law enforcement agencies. It's interesting, my one buddy who I grew up in Brandon listening to it, he's now a police officer in the Brandon Police Force.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But he still listens to it. He's like, hey man, that's what I grew up on, you know?
And it, from what I read too, that FBI letter kind of backfired, not backfired, but it certainly drove sales and it sort of increased their popularity.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you watch the movie Straight Outta Compton that came out a few years ago, which sort of revived the popularity of NWA, the band members, they talked about it. Hey, they're like, wow, this is great publicity. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to be in newspapers and mm-hmm. those suburban white kids are going to go to the record stores and buy our albums because they're like, wow, this is something to be rebellious.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was actually just listening to a podcast that I listened to. Joey Diaz is a comedian, actor, but there was just talking about how a comedian was, he did something bad and he got press over it. And he's like, why would you do that? Why would you cover him? Because now he's selling tickets. He's selling out the comedy stores. And but that's what happens when you get press.
Yeah.
That's what you guys need to do with your band. You guys need to,
we need to do something really bad.
I've tried kicking over a few garbage cans and nothing's happened yet.
I'll get the mayor of Dauphin to ban you guys.
Yeah. You got it in there, right? Yeah. That sounds good. Okay, let's which one do you want to look at next here, Bray? Public Enemy? Let's have a look at that one.
Yeah, the thing about Public Enemy and the NWA Straight Outta Compton, the other album I picked, is three of these albums are on Rolling Stone's top 500. Mm-hmm. Your previous episode, who's the person on there?
Tracy Orisco, number two.
Mm-hmm. Right. She was mentioning about Rolling Stone and top 500 albums.
Yeah, so it was a Miles Davis album, I believe.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, I better check, see if any of my albums are on there. And three of the ones I picked were on there. So when it comes to Cam and not knowing much about hip hop, I'm like, hey man, these are great albums that people listen to and that are, iconic.
Yep. Very iconic. Broaden my horizons. Yeah.
Yeah.
This one, the Public Enemy one I looked up was number 300 on Rolling Stone's list of 500 greatest albums of all time. And it was also in 2005 added to the U.S. National Recording Registry as culturally significant.
Yeah. And very similar to NWA, Public Enemy took a more political approach, but was very angry about what was happening in their parts of the United States. Obviously, being a white suburban kid from Canada, I can't relate to that. But I was like, oh, you know what? I'm sort of angry. My mom pisses me off once in a while, things like that. So I was like, oh, this is excellent. But the reason the Public Enemy one is up there is, from the first track to the last track, it's just continuous noise. But layers upon layers of noise, you'll have sirens, you'll have scratches, you'll have guitar riffs, you'll have bass riffs, and then you'll have Chuck D and Flavor Flav bouncing off each other with their lyrical prowess. And you're like, this is music. This is, wow, this is right in your face.
This is not an album that you can just listen to once.
Yeah, and I remember playing it for the first time. I was like, well, when do I press stop and rewind, on the old boombox? When you have your favorite songs, you press stop and go back and play it. I was just like, I'm just going to let this thing play out. And wow. You go to the B-side, and there's some great tracks on the B-side that most people skip over, but it's just... it's in your face, it's pow, and you're like, wow, there's some great lyrics in there, some great noise. The production on this is amazing. Chuck D and the Bomb Squad, three or four producers get together and they're like, let's put this here, let's put that there, which led to a whole bunch of problems.
Mm-hmm. You said that you talked about being mad at your mom and stuff, and when we sent you the questions to kind of prep for the episode, you said that one of your memories of the Public Enemy album was your mom being mad about the sirens in the bass, probably coming out of your bedroom or something rather, and skipping math class and going to play basketball instead.
Yeah, well, I had to throw that in there, you being the math teacher. but hey, you know what? This is in Brandon, and we're in a math class that was not motivating us to be the best students possible. So we're like, screw this. Let's jump in the car, go shoot some hoops. Let's grab the boom box and bought some PE.
Mm-hmm. And back to, we were talking about it being on the, a very culturally significant album. These guys, Public Enemy, were actually inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as well back in 2013 and honored with a Grammy Lifetime Achievement. So these guys are, they're well respected in that world.
If you ever get a chance, listen to their Hall of Fame induction speech. Ice Cube goes off on Gene Simmons because Gene Simmons' Kiss is like, why is hip hop in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? It doesn't belong. And Ice Cube gives a very intelligent speech about, you know, the origins of music and hip hop coming from jazz and bebop and this and that, and just sort of throws it right back at Gene Simmons.
Right.
And they show Gene Simmons in the crowd, and he's just sitting back like, yeah, whatever, man.
Yeah, it really isn't a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, because I've been there, and all sorts of genres are represented there. So if you've never been, and you being a Cleveland Browns fan, Bernie.
I've been there, man.
You've been there? Yeah. When I realized, put those two together, I'm like, oh, yeah, Bernie's been there.
Well, I got to disagree with Gene Simmons as well. I think, you know, rock and roll, hard rock, I think, you know, what you get from those, that music is a feeling. Yeah. And it's a sense of something. You know, there's something going on. There's something driving you. And I've never spent any time with this Public Enemy record, but right from the first sound, you know, that comes at you on the first track, it's boom, 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 boom. And it's hard rock to me. I mean, it got me moving, that's for sure.
Talk a little bit, Bernie. I was reading here that this album released in 1990, was made prior to all the sampling laws that came out. And this one has thousands and thousands of music samples that these guys never paid for. Just tell us a little bit about that, what you know.
Yeah, and it also goes hand in hand with the Ice Cube album that I mentioned about later. In that album, in the liner of it, he mentions where he got the beats from, where he got the songs from. And in this Public Enemy one, it's just who produced it, who wrote it, but not where they got the music from. So what was happening is these musicians from the 50s, 60s, 70s, in which hip-hop groups were sampling from, they started to hear their music being played again on the radio. And they're like, hey, that's cool, you know, all right. I remember making that song. And then they go to their record company executives and be like, hey, I heard parts of my song on the radio. So do I get a check for that? And they're like, what are you talking about? And then it's sort of filtered back that all these hip hop groups are taking, you know, chunks from this song or a bass groove from here and putting it in making their songs. So there were some legality issues with that as it came upon.
What's the background? Like, again, I'm coming from that a guy that really knows very, very little about this genre. What caused those early hip hop guys to sort of do that sampling? And what was the big origins there?
I guess it would go back to the old two turntables and a microphone aspect, in which, you know, you take two records and just sort of play them and get certain, you know, certain dance points, certain groove points in which you can scratch and mix the music together. And, you know, you'd be playing it and the MC would be rapping over top of it and throw on another record. So that's sort of the history behind that part of it.
Okay. But why were they doing that instead of making their own, is what I'm asking, you know? Is it a cultural thing? Is it a...
That's a good question. Perhaps maybe financial. They're like, hey, you know what? We can't get a band together. But hey, I can go to my uncle's record collection and I can throw on this George Clinton album and throw on this other album and, you know, hook together these speakers. And hey, we've got sort of some music. We've got a band now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I have to imagine that was probably pretty fun too at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't have the musicianship that a lot of these guys had. But you know what, going back to the NWA album, the first track, Straight Outta Compton, it was like, oh, I can do this. I can rap. So being from Brandon, I'd be like straight out of Brandon and talk about and then when I moved to Dauphin, it was straight out of Dauphin, crazy Ukrainian named B-Dog, you know?
We got to get Mayor Al to get us our home movies and see if we can get a little sample of Bernie rapping back in there.
Yeah, some B-dancing.
Yeah.
That
would be
well, I got the technical skill you would have had to put those samples together.
I would agree. It's phenomenal.
Much less rapping over it, yeah. But I mean, it is a phenomenal album, and I really take into it. So this particular album is going onto my personal playlist as well.
Okay. Yeah, check out some songs on the latter part of it. Who Stole the Soul? B-Side Wins Again. Those are some tracks that a lot of people skip over, but are, wow, this is right in your face. This is cool.
Mm, nice.
Okay. Let's talk about the Beastie Boys. 1994.
Yeah. This is their fourth album. First one was Licensed to Ill. That was their, you know, huge commercial success, sort of when rap music, hip hop was becoming mainstream. Their second one was Paul's Boutique. It's their only album in Rolling Stone Top 500. But a lot of people hated it. They're like, this is whack. What are they talking about? And Paul's Boutique was way ahead of their time in terms of production. And most people were expecting the Beastie Boys to, you know, keep talking about drinking beers and partying in New York City. And this one had a different vibe to it. The third one, because Paul's Boutique was a flop, was Check Your Head. And they went back to their punk origins. They started playing music in terms of guitars, bass, drums, and making songs that way with synthesizers. The old Moog synthesizers.
Yep.
Yeah, they had some cool songs with that. And then this fourth one.
This is the one you picked, right? The fourth one?
Yeah, the fourth one was just sort of a combination of all of those. They're like, we're not going to reinvent ourselves. We're the Beastie Boys. This is what we do. We do, you know, braggadocio, hip-hop, rapping. Yeah, we can still party. But you know what? We have a sort of a political vibe as well. And then, you know what? Let's throw in a punk song. All right. And now let's do another hip-hop song. And you know what? Let's get some Tibetan monks to do some chanting on this one song. So it was a combination of a lot of different musical genres on that album.
Tell us a little bit about that Tibetan monk stuff there. This wasn't on my album. Clifton and I split them up so that we don't have to spend a whole lot of time listening to both or all the albums. But I put on a little bit of Beastie Boys here, a little bit of time today. But I didn't get to this one. So tell us about that Tibetan one.
Yeah, I think it's like song number 20. MCA, one of the Beastie Boys, he's a practicing Buddhist. And he heard about these Tibetan monks being oppressed in Tibet with the Chinese coming in there and, you know, knocking skulls with sticks and everything. And he's like, we got to do something to help these guys out. So he did a bunch of benefit concerts in the late 90s. And I remember in Lollapalooza, I saw them at Lollapalooza in Minneapolis in 94. And they actually had a bunch of these Tibetan monks come on stage and do this chanting for the first 5-10 minutes.
How did that go over with the crowd?
It was weird because, you know, there's some rednecks in the crowd and they're like, get this crap off. Who are these guys in dresses? You know, but then, you know, there was some different people, different, you know, audience members are like, okay, this is cool. But, you know, after about 2-3 minutes, people are there for a rock concert. They're not here to, you know, listen to guys do some chanting.
Yeah.
You know, it was respectful. Everybody's like, hey, good job. Now get off. You know, we want to see L7. We want to see A Tribe Called Quest. We want to see Beastie Boys. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've talked about the Fear of a Black Planet, Ill Communication, Straight Out of Compton. We talked about the FBI, I think, right?
Yep.
So let's move on to the Tribe Called Quest, A Low End Theory, 1991. This is their second album.
Yeah. What did you think of that album? You're the one to listen to it, right, Cam?
It was on my list to listen to. I listened to the Ice Cube one first, and then I went to this one. What I like to do is kind of put it on and listen to one or two songs, and then I kind of go into some research, and then I start looking for the things that they're talking about and hearing them. And I definitely heard that minimalist approach that people talk about, and it was very much stripped down. just vocals, drums, and bass. The bass are very front and center, very right in your face kind of thing. This album, from what I read, was widely regarded as one of the greatest hip-hop albums of all time. So would you agree with that, Bernie?
Yeah, it's definitely one of, I don't know, if I had to make a top 20 list, it would be up there.
Well, it's on your top five.
You know, it was tough stripping down for that top five. I was like, oh, how am I leaving out Cypress Hill? How am I leaving out Snoop Dogg?
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but with A Tribe Called Quest, it was totally a different vibe. You know, you got Public Enemy, you got NWA, who have this demonstrative braggadocio in your face. This is what we're about. And A Tribe Called Quest was more laid back. It was political, but it was more, this is how we're going to get to you, by giving you this sort of jazzy groove, by making you listen more in depth to the lyrics. I got hooked on it in Brandon. There's this hip hop group called Farm Fresh. DJ Honeycutt, he's like a DJ. He'll play the Ukrainian Festival once in a while. Yep. He was their DJ. Rod Bailey, Big McEnroe is his stage name. He got me onto this album. He's like, oh, you like Public Enemy, hey? I'm like, yeah. They're hard. This is awesome. This is in your face. He's like, got something even more hard for you. So I put in the tape player. I'm like, bam, 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 bam. I'm like, oh, this isn't quite that hard. But I was like, oh, this is good. Like the musicianship on here, the bass. Just
got great funk to it.
Yeah, good funk to it.
Yeah. And actually that bass, I was reading the one track has Ron Carter, who's a jazz musician. And when I read that, I thought, oh, that's cool. And I made sure that, oh yeah, that's this track, and I could really hear it on that track, the double bass. And he actually only agreed to do that with the guys if they cut back on their profanity in the album. And I definitely noticed that too as I was listening to it. I'm not hearing that same language, the same lyrics that I'm hearing in the other albums.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll drop the occasional F-bomb once in a while, but you know, NWA would be talking about bitches and hoes and this and that. Tribe Called Quest is like, hey man, you gotta look out for these girls. You gotta respect women. And you know, at that point in my life, I was like, oh, that's cool. Maybe that'll help me get the girls, you know? Talk to them, respect them. Hey, what's going on?
This album cover, and actually a lot of the other ones too, are sort of known for their album covers. This one is regarded as one of the most iconic in hip-hop history. So talk about the album covers a little bit here, Bernie.
Yeah, you have this, I don't know if it's a male or female, this androgynous figure in this black skin tight suit with these red and green stripes in this sort of kneeling sort of crunched up position. And you're like, oh, wow, that's different. You look at the Public Enemy album cover, you know, it looks like a solar eclipse, you know, this big black planet going over Earth. You have the NWA album cover, you know, from an ant's eye view with, you know, the camera going up, looking at these six guys down menacing, you know, growling like this is what we're about. So hip hop album covers, you know, when you go into the record store, when you're 14, 15, you're like, oh, I got $20. What am I going to buy? And sometimes you look at an album cover and be like, hey, man, that looks cool. I'm going to get that one. Mm-hmm.
It is a very, I was just looking it up here. It's a very, very interesting cover for sure. Okay. Well, the first one, the last one on your list, and you really didn't give them to us in any order, but watch out. Clifton's going to soon ask you to put them in order. So I'll let you kind of think about that in the back of your head. The first one that I listened to was the last one on your list, was the Ice Cube one, The Predator. And this was vastly different from the Tribe Called Quest one. This one was released within months of the Rodney King Los Angeles riots in 1992. And you can really feel that anger coming out in this.
Yeah. You go back to that Straight Outta Compton album by NWA, and in the movie, they talk about being journalists, about being street reporters, about, hey, this is what's going on in our environment. This is what's going on here in LA and Compton. Of course, you know, being from Brandon Dauphin, I'm like, wow, that's a different planet. I don't know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. But then when you see the Rodney King incident happen on the news, And then the aftermath, you're like, okay, well, I guess, yeah, this is what's going on. This is the cause. This is the effect. This is what's going to happen. And there's many parts in there in which Ice Cube is not apologizing on that album about what happened. He's like, you know what? We've been oppressed. We've been beat down so many times. This is bound to happen.
How much do you know about that Rodney King incident, Bernie?
I always remember, like, just that initial TV cast of, you know, that old crappy Sony videotape that they had of it. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, how come nobody is saying anything? How come everybody's just standing by and watching?
Yeah.
And I'm like, did the guy have a gun? What was going on? No, he was just drunk and he wasn't listening and he wasn't following their instructions. And they're like, you know what? Screw this. Everybody's shooting guns at us. And the LA cops, they just beat the crap out of them.
Yeah, it was certainly, I was just a real young man at that time too. And it was kind of very, very shocking. Like, what is going on here? Why are they doing that? It was the first sort of that type of incident that we unfortunately see far too often now. But it was the first one in my memory of that kind of incident. So, and again, you can really hear that, even the cover of Ice Cube, you just sense that anger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And that starts off with the first track. They have a sample of a movie, American Me, great film talking about like Mexican gangsters in LA and a prison scene. And then it goes right into a Queen sample of We Will Rock You and just boom, 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 boom. And Ice Cube rapping over top of that until it gets to about the seventh track. It Was a Good Day. Quite an ironic song about, hey, you know what? Not everything is bad. There are some good things happening here, you know. Cops aren't bugging me today. I got my best fat burger, played some basketball, got a triple-double. Yeah, but most of that album was street reporting about what was happening in his environment.
The one that the song that I liked was Now I Gotta Wet Ya. I really liked how the horns, they come in and it's like left to right. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? I had to double check that my headphones were connected properly because I thought I was hearing it wrong. But I really liked that and the bass on that one. And Dirty Mac as well, a really cool bass line on that one. I like that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. And you know what? Those are not even in my top five of favorite tracks from that album. That's cool that somebody can be like, oh, hey, I liked that song. That was a great one.
Well, I think part of it is, I mean, only a one-time listen, right? I'm going to listen for certain things. And I think Clifton mentioned at one point that you got to listen to these albums a few times to really sort of get into the lyrics and really have the lyrics in front of you and do some of your own research to know what they're talking about, right? So I kind of cue in on being a bass player. I kind of cue in on the bass and I'm like, oh, that's kind of a cool thing. I like that. So probably just my perspective on it.
Do you have any other historical perspective from that album? You know, like maybe coaching basketball back in the day and you're like, hey, I remember hearing that album.
You mentioned in the questions that we sent, just for people that are listening, we sent out questions just to kind of give people some sort of some homework, I guess you could say, to kind of prep you for the episode. And you mentioned that this was the album that you guys would, Bernie was a player on one of my first basketball teams that I coached here in Dauphin. And they would slip this into the CD player, according to Bernie. And so I probably heard some of this album. So go ahead and talk about that, Bernie.
Yeah, you know, it'd be pregame warm-up, and we'd be playing Ice Cube, The Predator. It'd just come out, and I'd slide up to Cam. I'd be like, hey, it's going to be a good game. And he'd be like, yeah, he's, you know, focusing on the guys warming up. And he's like, what the hell's going on here? What are they talking about? Did they just say the F-bomb? Did they just say shit here? I'm like, oh, I don't know. It must have been Hootema. Hootema slipped that CD in.
That's funny. And like, that was probably the first. Now you go in and to the gyms and it's, I mean, you still hear it every once in a while. So there's still kids doing the same thing 30 years later, right?
That's right.
But interesting enough, I probably heard some of these songs driving the van with you guys back in the 90s kind of thing and just didn't realize it. I was listening to the hip in my own head or something. I don't know. Who knows what was going on.
Whereas the songs here on these albums, they were really coming from a time in history when it there was a lot of hardcore stuff going on in the streets, and like you said, like the Rodney King, and
yeah.
Whereas now, do you need to swear so much? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to come from our current situation, but now I don't listen to the new hip hop because I can't hear it. It's just this mumble rap. It's just like this. I'm like,
you're getting
out here. I guess I'm getting old. Yeah.
Getting old, man. Okay, so now I've got to throw over a clip.
So here you are. You're quarantined. You've got your five albums. You're probably going to start, you know, maybe from five, and you're going to go to your most favorite. So from five to one, what's that list look like for you?
I'm going to go five Beastie Boys. You know what? You got to love the Beastie Boys when you're talking about hip hop. But there's just some parts of that album I'm like, you know what? I don't need to hear this minute and 30 punk song. Just give me some straight hip hop. So that's why Beastie Boys is five. Mm-hmm. For A Tribe Called Quest, you know what? Tribe Called Quest, you got to be in that certain mood to really appreciate it. You know, it's sort of a Sunday afternoon listening song, but they can rock it. I saw them in Lollapalooza, and they had a 45-minute set, and they had everybody glued to them. So mm-hmm. They're great performers as well, but it'd be a certain mood for A Tribe Called Quest.
Hey, you put Busta Rhymes in any group, and I think you're rocking it.
Yeah. Ice Cube, number three, The Predator. It's probably not his best album. A lot of people say America's Most Wanted, Death Certificate, his first and second one, are his best one. But for some reason, I just like The Predator. There's just mm-hmm. some great songs on there that really gets me pumped up and just thinking about things. Mm-hmm. Number two, NWA, Straight Outta Compton. It's close between that and Public Enemy for number one. But the last track on the NWA Straight Outta Compton, they have a song called Something to Dance To. It sounds like a 1987 pump up the jam, Technotronic. It's totally whack. Does not belong on the album. And that's why I can't give NWA the number one spot.
I probably heard it at Scandals when I was in university. Oh, no, that would have been a couple years before that.
I wonder if we can find out how that song got on the album then. If it's so out of place, what's the story on that track?
I think there was like a sixth member called the Arabian Prince. And he was just sort of had this dance group going that sort of just merged with NWA. And when they did the whole album, they're like, okay, yeah, let's give this guy a bone. Let's put him on there.
He's their Drake. Is Drake the sixth man on the court for the Raptors?
Yeah.
Drake has a purpose. Arabian Prince is black. Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet, just, you know, it's not their best album, like the Ice Cube one. A lot of people say Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back. Their second album is more profound. Kurt Cobain of Nirvana said it was one of his favorite albums. Mm. But Fear of a Black Planet, just every song on there just flows one into the other. Just that's my favorite one.
And it's it really caught me too. It's one of the ones that I took on to listen to, and right from the opening track, right through to the few next tracks, glued. I mean, I was really digging it. It's an album that's going into my personal playlist, that's for sure.
Nice.
While you guys are talking here, I'm Googling Something to Dance For. You're right, Bernie. The vocals are the writer was Arabian Prince, and the sample is Dance to the Music by Sly and the Family Stone. Oh, I'm going to listen to that now and see if I can hear that. That makes sense. So.
For sure. Oh. It's a black one, man.
All right. I'm going to check that out. Okay. So here's the tail end of the podcast is, now the idea is you're supposed to come up with an album that you are most embarrassed that you can't believe you bought it. Like if someone's flipping through your collection, you're going, what the heck is this? Why have you got this in here? Once again, Clifton, we've got someone breaking the rules. We've had the double albums. We've had the greatest hits.
Yeah.
Bernie refuses to give us an embarrassing one, and he's just going to give us a disappointing album. So he won't give me a straight answer, so I'm going to make fun of him. You know, I know that he's a big Kenny Rogers fan, you know, and there's nothing wrong with Kenny at all. It just doesn't fit with all this. So I'm surprised you didn't pick Kenny Rogers here. But anyways, your most disappointing one, go ahead.
Well, when you go back to Trevor Sitnick in episode one there, he was talking about Hammer and Please Hammer, Don't yeah. Hurt Him in that album. Sure. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I bought that one. Most disappointing, Judgment Night soundtrack. It was a movie in the early 90s. Dennis Leary was in it. I can't remember who else. It's good.
Emilio Estevez.
Emilio Estevez, yeah.
But the soundtrack was...
Ice Cube, too, wasn't it?
No, Everlast from House of Pain was.
Oh. Hmm.
But it was this rock and rap mixture. Just let's pick this rock band, this rap group, and let's get them to combine on tracks. So they had Cypress Hill and Pearl Jam. They had Ice-T and Slayer, Run DMC and Living Color. But it just, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. It was totally whack. It just, yeah.
And the hype around it too, from what I read, I wasn't familiar with it at all, or the movie really. The hype around it was big too, that same kind of thing. Right? Well, we're bringing these two together. It's going to be this super group kind of thing. And did it really take off? Did people listen to it?
Nah, it didn't mesh. It didn't flow. It was just, all right, it seems like we got 1 hour of studio time. You put together this song and you rap over top of it, and there was no real, didn't flow.
Were the two groups, not the two groups, but like, were the groups matched up together, do you know, at all, Bernie? Or like, did they get along? Or was like, yeah, we got, you know, our lawyers got us into this and we got to do it, or agent, whatever, and make the best of it? Or
I really don't know much about it, because once I bought the album, listened to it a few times, I was like, all right, chuck this in the pile I'm not going to listen to for a while.
You know, it's probably, you know, when you think of genres coming together, like hip hop and jazz, probably, you know, Tribe Called Quest, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's the stuff. Yeah. That's the stuff that sort of, it grew organically, you know, by these members, because that's what they were listening to. But then at the same time, doing, you know, their own thing, which even Miles Davis did too. Like, he was in our last episode, you know, he was, he did that a lot of in his music, where he just, let's just do our own thing. Even with the players that he was playing with, you do your thing and I'll come in there when I can. But this kind of seems like a forced union, and that's probably why it didn't work out as well as they had hoped.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree.
I listened to it a little bit, because I had to find out about it, because when I read about it, I listened to Me, Myself, and My Microphone, and I liked the bass line on that one.
Yeah. I don't know how Cypress Hill and Pearl Jam can't, you know, make something.
Yeah, you'd think that'd be
good. That would have been good. Yeah.
But it has been successful in the past. Anthrax, Public Enemy, Wyclef Jean, he did a song with Kenny Rogers.
There you go.
Know that one, man.
Thanks, Bernie. This has been a lot of fun talking about a genre that I know nothing about. So I've definitely learned something tonight. You've been the teacher tonight, and I've been the student.
I've also been a passerby on a lot of this music and hearing it, but not paying too much attention. I was kind of in my own heavy metal world there. So, no, this was great.
We've definitely got, this is our third episode here, we've definitely got a wide variety of music represented, and we've got our next one lined up as well, and we're expanding even more, aren't we, Clifton? We kind of know what's coming here as well, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know what's coming. I've seen a little bit of the list, and I have no clue whatsoever.
I haven't done any research yet, but it's going to be great. So thanks, Bernie, for jumping in with us tonight, and please spread the word, and we'd love to have some more guests on.
Oh, it's been a blast. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yo, give me something to dance to.